Thank you, Your Honor. Robert Marsh of Silver and Dubofsky, registration number 31104, on behalf of the plaintiff appellant, Pueblo Imaging Company, LLC.
Counsel, I did mention to you that the timing is self-monitoring, so you're probably familiar with it.
I am, Your Honor. Okay. Thank you.
All right.
May it please the court, counsel, as originally conceived, this case was an issue of improper competition by an existing member of an LLC. That conception led to an original appeal and an opinion of a division of this court in 2008. As subsequently litigated and tried, however, the case was simply not limited to the issue of improper competition. To the contrary, it involved allegations and claims of misappropriation of the corporate opportunity, of non-disclosure of both a present existing conflict of interest and of material market information concerning impending competition, and a violation of both statutory and contractual obligations of good faith through Parkview Medical Center's effort to, in essence, sell its vote in favor of necessary capital improvements in exchange for a preferential distribution of profits and capital, that were prohibited by Pueblo Imaging's operating agreement. The crux of the district court's error post-trial is that the 2008 opinion and mandate of this court limited its jurisdiction to consideration of two issues. The first issue being whether Parkview's actions constituted improper competition in violation of its fiduciary duty of loyalty, and the second issue being whether Parkview had breached its duty of good faith in a manner that resulted in damages to Pueblo Imaging. There is really no dispute, however, that the district court's jurisdiction was not so limited by the mandate. Indeed, Parkview makes no effort in its answer brief to argue to the contrary, and the mandate itself is clear that there is no limitation on the district court's jurisdiction. This alone would warrant a reversal and a remand for further consideration by the district court in light of direction that its jurisdiction is not limited and that it should consider and resolve all of the claims framed by the pleadings, argued and tried by the parties without objection.
Counsel, even if we agree with your premise that the trial court erred in concluding that it had limited jurisdiction, why don't its other findings of fact foreclose the claims that your client seeks to advance?
For a couple of reasons, Your Honor. The first being that the underlying error in limiting its jurisdiction to consideration of competition infected all of its later determinations. One example of that is in considering the claim for a breach of good faith. The district court limited its consideration to the question of whether there was a breach of good faith by competing. Now, that was not required by any language of the 2008 opinion. It was not consistent with the party's arguments or their pleadings, which included allegations of other breaches, most notably by actions inconsistent with Pueblo Imaging's best interests. Now, those are the requirements of statute, the statutory obligation of good faith, but also the requirement of Section 5.5 of the operating agreement, which obliges every managing member to act in good faith in a manner reasonably believed to be in the company's best interests and with ordinary prudence. Another reason for that, of course, is that the court's findings relative to damages, for example, would not have disposed of all of the potential remedies nor all of the claims. This is for the simple matter that the claim for breach of contract and the claim for misappropriation of the corporate opportunity do not require proof of damages. It's Colorado law that proof of actual consequential damages is not an essential element of a claim for breach of contract. As a consequence, even the court's finding of the absence of damages, which we believe was made based on an inappropriate legal standard concerning the measure of damages and the sufficiency of the evidence, would not have disposed of all of the claims that were made had the court viewed them appropriately and not limited its consideration to the issue of whether there had been a breach by competition alone.
Counsel, let me ask you a question about the claims made. You just mentioned that the court did not address all of the claims made.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to determine and want to be sure that I understand what those claims are that you're saying were made. And the way I understand it from your briefs, that you're saying that the court should have addressed whether Parkview improperly usurped PIC's opportunity to be the first provider of this 3T MRI system in the Pueblo area.
Correct.
Secondly, whether Parkview breached the related duties of loyalty, candor, and full disclosure.
Correct.
And thirdly, whether Parkview breached its obligations under PIC's operating agreement to act solely in the best interest of PIC.
Correct. That's the breach of contract claim. That's
breach of contract claim. Are those the only three claims that you assert you made that were not addressed by the trial court?
Yes, Your Honor. Understanding that the claim for breach of contract for failure to act in Pueblo Imaging's best interest is derivative of several different acts and omissions by Parkview, but it is essentially the singular claim for breach of contract under Section 5.5 and other provisions of the operating agreement. That's right.
So those are the claims that we're dealing with that you allege the court did not address?
Correct.
Okay. And those are claims that you contend are framed by the pleadings and or tried by consent by the parties?
Framed by the pleadings, actually litigated through summary judgment, Your Honor, preserved in the amended trial management order, and yes, tried by the parties without objection. There was a singular objection by Parkview to trial of the claim originally pled for misappropriation of proprietary information. That was preserved in the amended trial management order, but of course that is a distinct issue, separate and apart from breach of contract or misappropriation of corporate opportunity. So yes, those three claims were expressly pled, were litigated through summary judgment, which included the corporate opportunity doctrine, for example, and were tried without objection by the parties and argued to the court.
Yeah. I had a question about, I think, the argument that you just made earlier. I'm looking at the findings, subsection 5, and if I'm understanding your argument correctly, you're saying that the court, for example, analyzed the breach of good faith only by competition.
Correct.
Because of its interpretation of the 2008 opinion. But when I look at subsection 5, it seems to divide those into two sections, one whether it was improper competition and one whether it breached its duty of good faith and fair dealing. So it's not clear to me that it was actually limiting the good faith just to the competition. Could you respond to that?
Of course. In paragraphs 18 and 19 of the decision, most particularly, is where the district court's decision on good faith appears. Paragraph 5 of the decision describes the limitation of the jurisdiction to the two issues remanded and the court's conclusion that as a consequence of this court's decision that there was no contractual provision addressing competition by members, that any claim for breach of contract was therefore resolved, was one word used, or foreclosed was another word used later in the opinion. So we take that legal conclusion as the predicate to the analysis later in the opinion of whether there was a breach of good faith. The conclusions there were that the contractual duty of good faith is tied necessarily to a specific contractual provision, and that because the 2008 mandate concluded there was none, there was no conceivable breach of good faith as a matter of the law of the case. In essence, limiting that consideration of the broader duty of good faith to the singular issue of competition. That was echoed in the district court's conclusion regarding the statutory obligation of good faith, which it read as precisely coextensive with the contractual obligation. Now, as your honors will be familiar from our briefing, that is in and of itself a separate independent error, because of course there are important distinctions between the two differences. This is based on both the language of the statute, which does not make it dependent upon any contract, and of course the coincident provisions of the LLC Act, which don't require any contract and yet impose an obligation of good faith. It's derivative of the legislative history, wherein the legislature removed the language from a prior version of the same statute, tying it to the terms of the operating agreement. And it is also derivative of the fact that the two duties apply to different subsets, if you will, of conduct and enable different standards of care. The statutory duty and the duty imposed by Pueblo Imaging's operating agreement apply to all of a manager's duties. The contractual duty, oh, and by the way, the contractual duty by statute, the standard of performance may be defined by the contract itself. It gives the LLC the right to establish the measure of performance of good faith. The implied duty and the common law duty of good faith, the contractual duty, by contrast, must be tied to a specific contractual grant of discretion, and requires only that a party to a contract not act arbitrarily in contravention of the party's reasonable expectations or the benefit of their bargain. So there are important differences between the two duties, and the district court's finding that they were precisely coextensive, combined with its improper focus on competition as the only conceivable way it could have been breached, resulted in its reversible error in application of those two doctrines.
Counsel, but regardless of whether you're looking at the common law duty or a statutory duty, wouldn't both of those necessarily implicate the testimony that came at trial and the relative credibility of the witnesses? And it seems to me that the trial court largely based many of its conclusions on its decision that, you know, PIC's principal, that it found that he was not credible. And so how do we deal with that issue where we have to defer to the trial court's credibility findings?
It is because, Your Honor, in the dispositive facts of non-disclosure and of the reasons for Parkview's refusal to approve capital improvements, the facts were undisputed. And this court's review of the legal effect of undisputed fact is de novo, and there is no deference to any credibility determinations or weight determinations, because there is none to be made when the evidence is undisputed. There is also the issue of damages we touched on briefly. I wanted to address in just a few seconds the measure of damages that was applied here and why we believe it was incorrect. Number one, it was incorrect because the court relied on the fact that Pueblo Imaging remained profitable. But of course, profitability by itself does not establish the absence of damages. And the court also inappropriately and contrary to the Supreme Court's decision in Toll versus Gunderson required proof of damages with mathematical certainty. Of course, all of that is subsidiary to the fact that damages were not an essential element to some of these claims. And finally, the district court erred in its remarks concerning piercing the corporate veil by failing to acknowledge the law as established in the Wang versus Arbus case cited in the briefs that Parkview may be held responsible for its own conduct. The undisputed facts were that Parkview knew what was happening. It had directed the radiologists to do this. It participated in the proposals, the financial analysis, and made no disclosure whatsoever to Pueblo Imaging. I see that I have 35 seconds left, and I'd like to reserve that for rebuttal. Thank you.
May it please the court, Matthew Rita of Fox Rothschild, appearing on behalf of the Kelly Parkview Medical Center, attorney registration number 23746. Judge Fox, you asked a question that I have myself, which is, what is it about these appellate arguments that Pick is making would disturb any of the findings that Judge Schwartz undisputedly made? Reference was made, I believe, by counsel to unspecified evidence and proof that would have been offered had these other theories been more specifically addressed. I note that there's no record in the trial proceedings below of any offer of proof having been made by Pueblo Imaging. They did not argue during, at the close, or even after trial that they were prevented from presenting any proof, any testimony, any documents that they did not believe sufficient to support their claims. In that regard, I think it's telling that if you look at the prayer for relief in their opening brief before this court, they don't ask for reversal. They simply say, please send it back to Pueblo District Court for more findings. Now, in candor, I believe by the time of their reply brief, that I didn't get a chance to respond to, they had added that request for reversal. But your point is well taken, or the point implicit in your question, was they don't challenge the findings on the core issues that Judge Hawthorne, your prior opinion, specifically did remand. So as I noted in our brief, they're not really saying Judge Schwartz got it wrong in what he did decide. They're simply arguing he should have decided more. In that regard, Judge Hawthorne, I appreciated your question, which I also had, which is, what were these specific theories that the trial court didn't address? And my notes suggest that counsel just told you corporate opportunity, breach of loyalty, and breach of contract. If you go back to the amended trial management order, which obviously controlled the course of the trial from the time it was entered, I don't see that formulation of claims. There's certainly no mention of a breach of contract claim, much less a specific provision of the operating agreement. I submit to this panel that to the extent Judge Schwartz did not address some of the specific provisions counsel is now relying on, it's because they weren't clearly framed for the trial court. Judge Schwartz never said, I decline to exercise jurisdiction on any aspect of the case. He decided the case after a full trial as he understood it to have been presented by the parties in the amended trial management order. Jurisdiction is an after-the-fact argument on the part of Pueblo Imaging. The word literally, if you do a search of the electronic record, the word jurisdiction was never even uttered at trial until the time of the opposing counsel's closing argument. And it's not mentioned in the judgment that's being appealed here today. Judge Boris, you asked whether we could read the trial court's judgment to preclude a finding as to good faith. And I submit to you, we can't so read it. If you go to paragraphs 19 and 20, which is on page 4996 of the record, I'll just read a brief excerpt from the court's findings. Quote, the court concludes that Parkview's pre-termination activities could not have violated any duty of good faith and fair dealing expressed or implied in the operating agreement. Let's stop there. To the extent Pick's theory is a contractual breach of the duty of good faith and fair dealing, this provision that I just read clearly disposes of that argument, whether the duty arises from an express provision, like 5.5, or an implied provision, which I think the judge correctly ruled was foreclosed by this court's prior opinion. So that takes care of the contractual duty of good faith and fair dealing. And Pueblo Imaging wants to argue, well, what about the statutory duty, which, again, this court's prior opinion expressly acknowledged. First line of paragraph 20, the same is necessarily true with respect to any statutory obligation of good faith and fair dealing, quoting again from the earlier 2008 opinion. On its face, the trial court's judgment expressly rules against a claim of breach of the duty of good faith and fair dealing, whether you discern that to be a statutory, a contractual, or a combined duty. So we submit that there's simply no basis to read the trial court's opinion to have not even passed on the issue.
Do you agree, it looks like that the trial court thought that the statutory language was coextensive with the contractual obligation? Do you think that the statute is coextensive or broader?
I acknowledge that word was used in the judgment. If you read the statute and you read the operative provision of the operating agreement, again, which is 5.5, they both use this term, good faith. And there was a convoluted argument in the opening brief about plain language of the statute and legislative history, I submit that the statute, when it was revised to take out the linkage with the operating agreement of an LLC, was simply a stopgap provision. It basically created a statutory good faith or fair dealing where an LLC's operating agreement did not. Whether you argue it was coextensive in every respect for purposes of this case and based on the record, there's been no meaningful distinction identified between what a duty of good faith under the statute would be as opposed to section 5.5 of the operating agreement. Based on the excerpts that I just read from Judge Schwartz's opinion, he clearly determined, as a matter of fact, that Parkview had acted in good faith with respect to Purple Imaging at all times. And that's the language used in the opinion. If I could, I'd like to address the corporate opportunity doctrine argument that's been made on appeal. In that regard, I would direct the court's attention to Trial Exhibit 92, which appears at page 3907 of the record. Again, I think this is a function of some of the lack of clarity in the manner in which Pueblo Imaging presented its claims over time, but the trial court necessarily disposed of this argument. In the memo at Exhibit 92, this is a memo from Pueblo Imaging's own counsel, not its trial counsel, but its counsel at the time, January 2006, and he wrote, quote, corporate opportunity doctrine is linked to a business opportunity that was developed through the use of corporate assets. And so let's indulge for the moment the idea that Pueblo Imaging did in fact sufficiently advance corporate opportunity claim, whatever that would consist of. It doesn't appear in the verified complaint, but let's assume it was part of the case and it was fully tried. The excerpt I just read from Pick's own legal counsel's memo makes it clear that the corporate opportunity has to derive from the use of corporate assets. What is the opportunity that Pueblo Imaging claims was misappropriated here? It is the idea to put a 3T or 3.0 Tesla MRI machine in Pueblo. Now that was originally presented as a misappropriation of confidentiality theory. Pueblo Imaging had argued that in late 2005, it had a meeting at which 3T was discussed, and they later claimed, or initially claimed, I should say, that Parkview misappropriated that idea based on the disclosures at a meeting. Predecessor counsel for Pueblo Imaging, back in 2007, very early in this litigation, said, no, no, that's not the case. We now realize that Emerald and Park West knew about 3T before we had our meeting, so there was no misuse of confidential information. That theory was explicitly withdrawn from this case long ago. Well, here it comes again, this idea of a 3T, they're now saying was not confidential or proprietary, but it was somehow a corporate opportunity that belonged to Pueblo Imaging. The problem with that is the factual evidence doesn't support that. And specifically, I would point out that Parkview already had years of MRI experience before it ever joined Pueblo Imaging. Evidence to that effect is found at pages 4532, 4533, 4589, and 4590 of the trial transcript.
Counsel, what about the argument, not so much that, you know, this was technology that was stolen from him or the idea of using it, but the argument that Parkview interfered with Pueblo Imaging's efforts to purchase the technology earlier, you know, presumably because Parkview wanted to do the same for itself.
Correct.
How do you respond to that? Is that also a potential source of a corporate opportunity or an interference with a corporate opportunity?
I don't think that's how it would be legally packaged, Judge Fox, but I think it falls down on the facts, like many of the other arguments in this case. And in that regard, this is the so-called veto argument.
Right.
The argument that you can't vote a certain way as an LLC member because if others on the LLC think you're not voting in its best interest, that's somehow illegal. Violation. I've seen no cases cited during this entire litigation that stands for that proposition, but I did understand from some of the filings by Pueblo Imaging's counsel that they try to link that up with section 5.4A sub 3 of the operating agreement, not the provision they identified for you, Judge Hawthorne, that they're claiming an express breach of, but I think that's where the legal linkage for the veto argument, Judge Fox, comes from. Problem is, as I said, there was no true veto. First of all, Parkview was not the only member that voted against equipment acquisitions. So the theory falls down from a causation standpoint because we're not the only ones that voted against it. And what's more, when Parkview did vote against some of those acquisitions and upgrades, they didn't say no. They said, we will not oppose an upgrade, but we want everyone to make a contribution, you know, to basically recapitalize the entity. Contrary to one of the suggestions made by my counterpart, and this is reflected incidentally by Exhibit Q of the trial record at 1912 in the record, the minutes of that meeting clearly show that C.W. Smith, on behalf of Parkview, as a member of Pueblo Imaging, said, I won't oppose it, but I want everybody to make a contribution to PIC. So any insinuation that he was holding out on some payment was going to come only to Parkview isn't supported by the record. So my answer to your question would be, the evidence doesn't support this detailed theory.
Thank you.
And just as Parkview had its own MRI experience long before it joined Pueblo Imaging, the 3T idea was clearly known to it and Park West constituents long before this late 2005 meeting at which Pueblo Imaging allegedly raised the issue. There again, the record is clear, pages 4839 and 4840, 4855 and 4856. These are, that's trial testimony from the so-called Emerald radiologists, Emerald being the entity that owned a portion of Park West, in which Parkview also owned an interest. Park West, not a party to this case, never owed any duties, contractual or fiduciary, to Pueblo Imaging, which brings us incidentally to an issue my counterpart wasn't able to touch on, which is this veil-piercing agency notion. Again, there was a factual finding by the trial court after hearing all the testimony, reviewing all the documents and evidence, that the Emerald radiologists acted independently. That is a factual finding that there's no basis to disturb. And so whether you say it was a veil-piercing threshold or whether you say it was a lower threshold under general principles of agency law, Judge Schwartz clearly found, in response to those very arguments by Pueblo Imaging, that no, these radiologists went out there, kicked the tires, I believe was the term he used in his judgment, looking for new MRI technology. Those radiologists, separate and apart from C.W. Smith at Parkview, by virtue of their professional background, were well aware of 3T technology. So if the argument for the breach of good faith and fair dealing is that Parkview learned everything it knows about MRIs from us, meaning PIC, just not true. Parkview was operating from years before PIC was even formed, an MRI, outpatient MRI, over at Pueblo Community College. So you can't argue they didn't know anything about MRIs generally, and you can't argue specifically with respect to 3T that that was a corporate opportunity that belonged to Pueblo Imaging. Again, the facts simply don't support it. We've noted in our brief why the notion that there's a requirement that damages have been awarded below doesn't work. That's an inherently factual issue. This is the textbook case of dueling experts. One saying that a very high number was incurred, the other saying little or no damages was incurred. There's no legal basis, notwithstanding the Utah case cited in the opening brief, that requires the trial court, put aside the fact that he didn't find liability, to assess an award of damages. For these and other reasons, if the court has no further questions, I would ask that the judgment below be affirmed.
I have a question, counsel. If you could explain to me a little bit more about how Parkview dissociated or resigned from PIC or Pueblo Imaging. I'm not sure I understand that clearly. What Parkview did, it still had an investment.
Correct.
And PIC.
Yes, to this day, it remains it's a passive still, investor. Right.
But there's discussion in the briefs about Parkview's dissociation and resignation from Pueblo Imaging. How did that occur, and just what's the effect of that?
As a historical matter, occurred in early 2006. The resignation and the dissociation were two different events. The resignation was on the part of C.W. Smith, who was the individual manager representing Parkview on the LLC. The dissociation was of Parkview as a member of the LLC, and that occurred effective February 1st, 2006. Hence that very important temporal cutoff point referred to in your 2008 opinion. So that's when it happened. How it happened was pursuant to the express provisions of the operating agreement that contemplate either manager resignation and or member dissociation. I'm not sure if that answers your question.
But as of February 2006, as right now, Parkview still has an investment.
Yes.
With PIC.
46.
In PIC.
Correct, 46.11%.
But it's not a member.
Correct, and it has no management authority or votes whatsoever.
No management authority, I understand that, but still it's not a member. But yet has an investment.
It's an investor in ALC, correct?
In ALC. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court, this all boils down to the fact that the district court's many legal errors prevented it from making the appropriate factual determinations. One of those, as referenced by Mr. Rita, was the issue of whether, quote unquote, at all times Parkview had acted in good faith. And that is in and of itself a legal error because, of course, this court's 2008 opinion foreclosed it in finding that the historic disclosures, which are again undisputed facts, did not insulate Parkview from any liability. And it bears mention that, I see that my time is up, may I conclude my thought?
Finish your sentence or thought, yes.
It bears mention, Your Honors, that regardless of any finding concerning the independence or alleged independence of the radiologist, it does not insulate Parkview from its own direct participation in the conduct giving rise to liability, not as a matter of agency law, but as a matter of the law that the party engaging in the conduct is always liable for their own participation or acquiescence with knowledge. Unless the court has any questions. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you for your helpful arguments. This matter will stand submitted to the court and an opinion will issue in due course. Thank you. Counsel are excused.